I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. Hey, welcome to Plant Yourself. I'm your host, Howard Jacobson. Two quick announcements before we get to today's show. If you're interested in becoming a health coach, I'm offering another run due to popular demand for people who can't make 8 p.m. on Wednesday nights, Eastern Time. So we're doing another run of the program, which will meet, the practicums will meet at 10 a.m. on Wednesdays, Eastern Time, U.S., which means if you're in Europe or Africa, that might be good for you. Also, if you're in the U.S. and evenings aren't good and you have free time in the mornings, either 7 a.m. Pacific time or 10 to 11:30 Eastern, then you can participate. If you want to find out more about becoming a wicked effective health coach, you can go to wellstartcoach.com. Second thing is, if you're not aware of it, Josh Lajani and I have a book that is free on Amazon Kindle. It's called Sick to Fit. And if you just go to Amazon and search for Sick to Fit, you'll be able to download it for free and read it on any Kindle-enabled device, even a phone, smartphone, tablet, computer, whatever. All right, let's get to today's episode. This is the Plant Yourself Podcast. I'm Howard Jacobson of plantyourself.com and wellstarthealth.com. This podcast is part of my mission to help you live a focused and fun life. Today's guest, Chris Bailey, talks to us about focus and about the two kinds of focus that can help us in a world that seems built to distract us, built to keep us fiddling with our devices, our phones, our tablets, our screens, built to keep us from being productive, from being focused, and from doing our best work and having our highest impact. I can't tell you how many people I work with at WellStart who are addicted to their screens in a way that gets in the way of movement, that gets in the way of they're making the right food choices, that keeps them up late at night so they're always chronically tired and chronically in need of a sugar hit or a caffeine hit, too tired to exercise. And it's because of the pull of these screens. And Chris Bailey offers us ways out. He offers us strategies. He offers us a way of looking at technology and a way of looking at focus and attention itself that can really empower us. After reading his book, Hyperfocus, and doing this interview, I have shifted how I work in some significant and profound ways, and I'm much happier for it. So I wanted to get Chris on the show after hearing him on the Bregman Leadership Podcast, put out by my friend Peter Bregman. And we had a wonderful time, Chris and I. We video it so you can see it on YouTube and also at plantyourself.com/301, today's episode. And Chris is not only smart and generous and kind, he's also funny as hell and charming. And we got a little bit goofy. So if you like that sort of thing, this is going to be a fun podcast for you. Before we get into it, two quick announcements. One is WellStart Health is starting a new cohort beginning of January. So if you would like to participate in that, to make 2019 your year, to lose the extra weight, to reverse chronic disease, to get fit, to become the person you say you want to be, we can help. It's a 12-week program with continued follow-up. We have text messaging. We have live coaching calls with me and Josh and our other coaches. And check us out, wellstarthealth.com. You can go to wellstarthealth.com/program to read all about it. And if you're interested, you can just click the apply button at the bottom. We'd love to have you in this first cohort of 2019. Second thing, the book that Josh Lajani and I wrote, Sick to Fit, is now available on Amazon, both as a Kindle ebook and a paperback. If you order it today and choose one-day shipping, you can get it in time for Christmas, so why not buy 30? Seriously, thanks to everyone who helped make this a Kindle bestseller. I think at this point we're number one in weight loss and fitness and weight management, and so grateful to everyone who has supported the effort so far. If you want to read it for free, it's for free on Amazon Kindle. Just go, all you need is a tablet or a smartphone or a computer or a Kindle itself, and you can go grab the book. It's entirely free. We also have a support group on Facebook and lots of reader bonuses. If you want the paperback, that costs money, and Josh is coming out here starting tomorrow, and we're going to be recording the audiobook, so that should be out probably in 3 to 4 weeks. So don't wait for that one, but pick up the Kindle and let us know what you think. If you have read the book and you'd like to leave a review on Amazon, that would help us immeasurably, tremendously, hugely. All it takes is just giving us some stars and a sentence or two, take you a couple of minutes, and it would really, really help out. Okay, now that I've told you about a book that you can read on your Kindle or your smartphone or your tablet, let's talk about focus and how to not let those devices get in the way of us living our best lives. Without further ado. All right, Chris Bailey, welcome to the Plant Yourself Podcast.
Good day to you, sir. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. We've been sort of chatting and bantering before we hit record. I think we're on a roll already.
We're on a good vibe wagon right now, my friend. I had a nice massage today. I did 30 minutes of meditation before, so if it sounds like I'm pretty relaxed right now, it's not because cannabis was just legalized in Canada. It's because I'm having like a zen, relaxing day today. How's your day going, man?
Well, it just got worse hearing that you got a massage.
Oh,
because now I'm comparing.
I found a masseuse that goes over in time, every single time. And so you book like 45 minutes and you get a 1 hour massage. You book a 1 hour, as I did today. I got a 1 hour and 20 minute massage. She gets so like involved and really into it. Her name is Elizabeth Howes, if you live in Kingston, Ontario, Canada, which the odds are honestly not very good of, but maybe there's that one person that wants to seek her out or drive to see her. She's amazing.
Yeah, or 1,000 people who are like, I'm moving to Kingston for a massage therapist who can't tell time.
Yeah, so far this episode has been like a promotion for Canada, which is honestly is looking better and better right now.
Yeah, I'm so happy the internet is getting through the border without any problem here.
Well, usually the border's iced over, but you know, at this time of the year. But I think so far so good. I'm just kidding.
Right. Well, I'll go up to Toronto every year or so. Is my martial arts grand teacher is in Toronto, so that's the
cool
ground zero for getting punched in the face.
Yeah, really. that's what they say. What's your favorite place that you've ever been to in Canada? Do you have one?
Well, I mean, I've got to say Banff, but I really liked Alma.
I've never heard of Alma.
That's in New Brunswick.
Oh, out east is gorgeous in Canada. If you're looking for a nice getaway and you maybe you want to go to Europe or something and you don't want to break the bank, fly to Halifax, which has an international airport, Halifax, Nova Scotia, and it's stunning. It's so, don't go in the winter because that's a terrible mistake to go anywhere north in the winter unless you like that kind of stuff. But Halifax is stunning, so I'd imagine Alma was similar.
Yeah, there was like you could walk out, you know, like a mile and a half in low tide that was then ocean or bay, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's the whole Anne of Green Gables vibe.
Yeah.
Prince Edward Island. So, yeah. But that's, but that's not what we're here to talk about.
I think we got distracted.
That is what we're here to talk about. Well, we're just lobbing each other softballs. Yeah. So you wrote a book. You wrote two books.
Couple of them.
But the recent one, I heard you interviewed by my buddy Peter Bregman, and it was a really, really useful podcast for me. So we got in touch.
Most of his are useless, you know. So I'm happy. No, I'm just kidding, Peter.
Well, sometimes it's like, you know, leadership, and you know, here I am, like, leading myself, and so you know, this is you know, this goes under the category of how can I suck less, and
ultimately that's what we're all trying to do. We're all sucking pretty, you know. We're doing okay, and this is honestly something that I think a lot of people come to productivity thinking is, oh, I'm so unproductive, or I'm so distracted, I'm so overwhelmed. But it, you know, most people are like that, and we're so hard on ourselves because the very idea that we want to invest in our productivity implies on some level that we're not entirely satisfied with what we're doing already, what we're already accomplishing, the lives we're already living, the jobs we're already working. And so I think, you know, it's striking that balance. So we need to become more focused. That's why I wrote a book on focus, because I found myself distracted when I was trying to work. So I thought, you know, if I'm, as somebody who's really into productivity, distracted, maybe other people are too. Maybe there's a part of the picture I'm missing here. But I think there is that dance that we need to do with ourselves, to lead ourselves, to be kind to ourselves as we invest in our productivity. So do both at the same time.
Well, that's a beautiful framing, because, you know, I work with people who want to improve their health. They want to eat better. They want to start moving. And boy, if you think, you know, me looking around my office and seeing piles of crap on the floor is, you know, emotionally troubling, you know, think about people with 200 pounds to lose.
Yeah.
Right. So starting from a place of I suck and I want to compare myself to other people who are doing it well is probably a recipe for blowback in just about any field.
Mm-hmm. And there was a point when I was 50 or 60 pounds heavier than I am right now. And, you know, the folks looking at the video are probably thinking, like, first of all, why does he have that big microphone in front of his face? But second of all, wow, this guy is so fit. He's so handsome. He's so good looking. No, I'm just kidding. But you know, I'm about 50 or 60 pounds lighter than I used to be. And a big shift that took place before that happened, first of all, it was being introduced to mindfulness and those practices that are adjacent to it. But second of all, it was very much that mindset shift of being kind to myself as I became healthier. You know, one big thing that shifted in my mind was realizing that through mindfulness and other things that I'm not fat. I have fat. And I can get rid of fat. So making that jump from, you know, from I'm a distracted person to I'm a person that happens to be distracted, or I'm somebody who's overweight to somebody who has too much weight that he needs to shed and get rid of. I think it's a freeing mindset, because you realize you're just a person who's embedded within these conditions that you found yourself in. How do we get out of it? How do we get out of this distraction and this overstimulation that we face throughout the day? And so that's something that I try to preach from the rooftops, just like you.
Right. And one of the things I love about the book is that you bring in sort of neuroscience, evolutionary theory, which, you know, when I tell people who think, who like, I am fat, there's something wrong with me. And when you look at the evolutionary bias towards storing weight in case of famine, right? Mm-hmm. And then people all of a sudden realize, oh, it's not me. I am in an environment that my brain and body are mismatched to. And so if you take a look, you know, you talk a lot about sort of, you know, the novelty bias and the bias towards towards pleasure or away from, you know, towards threat. And like, oh, our brains are wired this way. And we've just become so darn good as a society at pushing our own buttons that we need books like yours and research like yours and bully pulpits like yours to help us protect ourselves. So I see this as very much in a piece with the work that I do around diet, around movement, right? This is just, you know, what's the natural attainable quantity of input that our brains were meant to handle in the natural world, and multiply that by a zillion. And, you know, who among us isn't going to have a problem focusing?
Yeah, oh, exactly. And I think this is something that not enough quote unquote experts in the productivity space do is start with the science and work backwards to the way we should live and act differently, because that science is validating the way that we actually are. And so, you know, I'm not one of these people who has some 5, some 10-step solution to doubling your productivity. You know, I'm not one of those people. I'm one of these people who says, okay, how can we help ourselves using science? How can we accomplish more using that? And so when you realize and you start with the science and you look at the way we're wired, it's no wonder we're so distracted. We have so many, and our mind prefers to pay attention to a distraction in the moment because, you know, like you said, there's that novelty bias where within our brain's prefrontal cortex, the logical centers of our mind, they release a hit of dopamine, a main pleasure chemical in our mind, each time we focus on something that's new and novel. This is the same, you know, pleasure chemical that is rewarded when we, you know, eat an extra large pizza in one sitting, like you will be happy to know I did yesterday, Howard. so I feel very like an imposter being on this podcast. So I feel that should be a disclosure.
I'll be making some disclosures of my own before we're done. So.
Oh, this is exciting. This is like a confessional almost. It's not a podcast. It's a confessional. but like when you realize that we have this novelty bias that rewards us with a hit of dopamine for each new novel thing at which we direct our attention, you realize, okay, this is an uphill battle because at any one moment, our mind is drawn, in addition to anything that's novel, to anything that is pleasurable or threatening. So you think, what is pleasurable? What is novel? What is threatening? Well, something novel is our phone, which is attached at our hip throughout the day. Something pleasurable are the social media websites we visit that we naturally want to pay attention to. Something threatening, the news. You know, we're bombarded by information and news. And when we have so much information that we could direct our attention at in the moment, we gravitate to anything that is one of these three characteristics. We gravitate to the pleasurable, to the threatening, to the novel. Become yourself as you in greater productivity. This is a great way and reason to do so because we face this uphill battle.
All right. So I'm just getting a poor network connection sign, so I think we may have to switch. We may have to switch to audio only at this point.
All right.
But this will be a 10-minute teaser for the.
It was nice to see you.
Yeah. Well, we'll connect again at the end.
Yeah.
So what do I do here? I turn off my video.
Oh, yeah. Your beautiful face is fine. No. Yeah. It's funny you're such good friends with Peter. Because you both have really nice teeth, like this is the nicest teeth I've ever seen.
My goodness. Thank you. Mine were not cheap.
No? You've poured a lot of money into that mouth. Maybe Peter has too, and he just doesn't want to say.
Well, I had braces twice. I had them like when I was in junior high, and then I got them again the end of high school and college. So they...
You know, they cool. Oh, man. So yeah, you've put in the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to go there.
So did you get most of what I just said? Or
let's see. You were talking about, you know, the three things. The you finished with the news is threatening, and then you like gave us the answer, and that was what I missed.
Okay. Let me try to give you something that you can cut in here.
Okay.
And our attention naturally gravitates to anything that's novel, like, you know, the news, for example. And when we're bombarded by so many different things at which we could direct our attention at any one moment, what this means is that our mind is going to be drawn to what's novel, what's pleasurable, what's threatening. We're going to pay attention to the news instead of an Excel budget sheet that we happen to be updating. We're going to pay attention to our phone instead of a Word document, the report that we're writing in there. We're going to pay attention to social media instead of something that we truly ought and want to be doing. But this isn't our fault. And I think we need to internalize that idea.
Yep, absolutely. And so when we're thinking about, you know, productivity, you know, originally I was thinking about it just in terms of getting my work done. But as I went through the book, I realized like the costs of being distracted are far greater. And here's my confessional is, you know, I generally eat a very, very clean diet, but it was it was American Thanksgiving here last week, and we have a tofurkey, which is a giant lump of something plant-based with a, you know, a rich gravy. And it turns out that while I was on another call, I had a slice and I ate most of the gravy. And my wife came
when
in.
When you were doing a podcast?
No, no. Well, I was just...
I feel this is why you turn the video off, because you don't want me to see you like stuffing down bites of some tofurkey.
Yeah, no, I try not to chew loudly during the actual podcast. This was actually just a call with someone.
Okay.
And
so you can mute strategically.
Yes, yes. Keep the iPhone open, mutes the top left button while I chew loudly.
Yes.
And I realized, like, when I eat normal food, I take my time. I don't try to multitask. But here I was right before this interview with you talking about distraction and focus. And I had just like selfishly used up all the gravy and onions so that now there was this like, you know, lump of whatever soy wheat gloop with no yumminess next to it. And, you know, that I left. Yeah. That's what I left for my wife. I'm like this.
Here, have this gloop, honey.
Like this distractedness is more than just productivity. So I wondered if we could kind of like frame the topic of the book and why you got into it in terms of like what are the costs, especially these days, of having our attention fragmented and having its will dictated by externals and the culture and people with agendas.
Yeah. People do have agendas. You know, they A/B test the perfect color of a notification that gets our attention a bit more, you know, 0.1% more than a different color. And you know, I'm not one of these people who thinks corporations are evil, but the incentives that they have are to maximize your time in the app. And so when you couple the fact that companies like Facebook, like Instagram, like Twitter, they make more money for the more minutes you spend inside their app because they make more money in advertising, you realize, okay, and you couple that with machine learning and artificial intelligence where, you know, they can realize that everybody who likes the band AC/DC likes this, you know, and so it gets complicated when all these people are clamoring for our attention. But, you know, the one sentence that I think summarizes the book is that the state of our attention determines the state of our lives. And the quality of our attention and how much control we have over it is correlated with many, many different variables, such as how productive we are, such as how creative we are, such as how happy we are, and even how satisfied we are with our lives overall. That there was one of my favorite studies. It's a sadder study, I'll warn you, but it's one of my favorites because of how vivid it makes this idea. This study examined two groups of people. The first group of people watched 6 or more hours of news coverage about the Boston Marathon bombings. I think they happened in 2013, and they compared this group of people against folks who were running in the actual marathon. And what they found, what the team of researchers found, was that those people who watched 6 or more hours of news coverage about the Boston Marathon bombings were more likely to develop PTSD than somebody who was at the bombing and personally affected by it. The single biggest predictor of fear and anxiety in our lives is how much time we spend watching TV talk shows, of all things. And so I think this is the bigger frame that you mentioned, is that the state of our attention determines the state of our lives. But the more control we have over our attention, the happier we become, the more meaningful our life becomes, because we actually notice the meaningful things that are occurring all around us and pay attention to them in the first place. And, you know, I originally, I've got to be honest, I set out to write a book about productivity, about this topic, but I realized very quickly that productivity is kind of a side effect of managing our attention well. The real reason to do it is because our life improves by almost every single measure, and we feel like we're we have a greater level of control over what's happening.
Yeah, in that way, it occurs to me that, you know, when we work with people who are overweight, we talk about, you know, their weight in the same way. Like what they want is to, you know, wear the size 4, and we encourage them to think about the weight loss as a side effect of, you know, of doing the right things and not as the goal. And it seems like productivity is sort of the bonus of a life well lived.
Yeah, it's so funny. You set out to do these things, but you end up somewhere else. Yeah, you set out to lose weight, but you realize that exercise makes you feel amazing and that you're always happy that you do it. And that eating less, you have more energy when you do so because you're overeating most of the time, like I was doing with the extra large pizza yesterday. You know, it's these simple little epiphanies. And that was definitely that's fascinating.
Yeah. And the other thing, I think this probably takes us off topic, but like that Boston Marathon study, one of the things I thought about was, well, the people who were in the marathon probably developed less PTSD because they were running, right? Because the trauma comes from an inability to respond appropriately. So if you're just sitting in a chair watching a computer and you think your brain thinks you're safe, but the deeper circuitry has you in danger and you're just sitting there. That's like, you know, a friend of mine had a PTSD from being trapped in a burning car. He couldn't get his seatbelt off. And it was the inability to respond that was the trigger, as opposed to just being in a horrific and dangerous situation.
Well, that's what we feel when we watch the news. Like we can't respond, like we're kind of, and our attention is sort of held captive by whatever happens to be going on in the world. And we just feel bummed out and depressed and like things are tragic. And you know, consuming social media is to a large extent the same thing. I stopped using Twitter a while back. Maybe I check in once every day or two instead of multiple times every day, because I realized it simply made me sad. And this is something that I don't think we think enough about or acknowledge and check ourselves on enough, frankly, is, okay, so we're distracted quite a lot throughout the day. We all know that. Most of us are working in this state of overstimulation and over-distraction. But how do the different things that we pay attention to make us feel? You know, how does Instagram make you feel versus Facebook? How does Twitter make you feel versus watching the news? You know, which of these actually makes you happy? Arden, my fiance, we were hanging out in the living room the other day, and she was just kind of tapping around on her phone. And I said, like, babe, what are you doing there? You look miserable. No offense, but you don't look happy right now. And she said, oh, I'm on Tinder. No, she wasn't on Tinder. She was on Instagram. and I think, you know, Instagram is the most wholesome social media application that I can possibly think of. You know, it's full of nice lattes and fitness models and these wonderful little videos where they make an entire meal and, you know, everything shrinks down and you know, suddenly you have this beautiful cheesecake that came to life in like 10 seconds because you're watching BuzzFeed Tasty, which is one of my favorite channels on Instagram. But she was watching and consuming stuff like this, and I thought, out of any social media site, Instagram makes me the happiest by a large margin. So what does it say that when she was looking at it, she felt inadequate, or she felt unhappy when she was looking at all these colorful pictures? And I think it really is the fact that we mindlessly stimulate ourselves without intent behind what we're doing. One of the most alarming statistics that I encountered in writing the book, it was conducted by Microsoft, who looked at their employees and how they worked. And what they found was that when somebody was working in front of a computer, they focused on one thing for just 40 seconds before they switched to doing something else. And if you find that hard to believe, look at what happens often when you first wake up. You know, maybe your phone wakes you up, and so that's your alarm. And then you see that two emails came in overnight, so you check your email. Then you go to Instagram and then Facebook because you got a notification there, and then you get a tweet at you. And before you know it, half an hour has gone by, and he bounced around between a loop of applications every 40 seconds or so. And this is the way that we live our lives. And so it's no wonder that our minds are overstimulated and that we find it difficult to do a deeper level of work, that we find it difficult to focus. It's the way that we live throughout the day.
Right. And there's a paradox there that seems fairly juicy when you talk about, you know, we're getting hits of dopamine, right? This pleasure juice, reward for doing the very thing that's making Arden unhappy. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, there's, and we certainly see this, you know, in my work around food, that, you know, especially addictions to, you know, to different substances, people are miserable in general, but they're getting enough pleasure in the moment to kind of drown out the misery.
Yeah, and I remember that when I was overweight myself, you know, and I think sometimes today I see somebody eating a juicy cheeseburger, or I see them eating a funnel cake or something. I think, man, I want a funnel cake because I'm on a fast or something. And then I think back to when I was 50 or 60 pounds heavier and I had those same habits of drowning out whatever I was feeling by eating too much. I realized I didn't really enjoy things as much as I do now, because there's less of a contrast between it's like if you're like exceedingly, like you're a billionaire, where you just get adjusted to the life that you have, and then the studies show that you become just as happy as everybody else. But you don't learn this, and you think, man, this can't be true, until you become a billionaire. You can have all the food in the world, but not appreciate any of it if that's what you eat all the time. And so that's something, like, if you want to make food taste better, eat less of the stuff that makes you feel bad, because the contrast alone will make it so much more tasty. And focus on it. Like, for God's sakes, this is something that I've realized on meditation retreat a lot of the times, is food never tastes as good as it does during a meditation retreat.
I know. Where do they get those cooks? They're amazing, right?
Yeah, the most, when it's like some just like college kid who doesn't, he's like making mac and cheese or something. And it's like, oh my God. Like, no meal will taste as good as the meal you focus on with 100% of your attention.
Right. The best meal I ever had was steamed zucchini after a 7-day water fast.
Oh, yes.
Like,
that sounds tasty.
That was like fireworks.
Yeah, because there's that beautiful contrast. And you actually notice it. You pay attention. You don't just scarf it down like the Thanksgiving leftovers.
Right. So one of the things I made note of to bring into my work from your book was, and you were talking about it in terms of funnel cake in the book, this idea of second and third order consequences, which I love so much as a habit. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, for sure. So there's always the first order consequences of everything that we do. It's the it's just the consequences of an action that we take, or something that we say, or something along those lines. And so in the book, I use the example of eating a funnel cake. And so, you know, a first order consequence of eating a funnel cake is that you enjoy the funnel cake. But when you look a bit deeper, there are deeper consequences to everything we say, to everything we do, everything we think, even, especially when we believe the thoughts that are flying through our head, even though so many of them are random. And eating a funnel cake, like, a second order consequence of that might be that you break a new diet regimen that you just started. A third order consequence of that might, you know, take a bit longer to materialize, but it might be that because you gave yourself permission to eat the funnel cake, then maybe more dopamine is coursing through your mind, and then you feel like the what the hell effect kick in, and then you eat more, and you kind of break down the habits of eating properly that you'd built up. And I think this is something that we need to approach everything with, is that there's the bigger interconnected picture of every decision that we make and every action that we take. And our work is the exact same way, by the way. You know, take, for example, if you're deciding between doing a bit more email and mentoring a new employee that joins your team. So email feels very urgent, which makes it feel important, more important than it actually is. And so we tend to it, and a first order consequence of that is we relieve the stress. We have less email in our inbox. But when you look at the deeper consequences of us answering some email, usually there aren't any, unless we send a yes reply to marry someone. I don't know. Most people don't propose over email.
No, that's done via Facebook message, I think.
Yeah, Facebook message or text message is a bit more intimate, which is kind of nice. Or just FaceTime somebody, which is, you know, you gotta up the richness of the communications. But mentoring a new employee, you know, first order consequence of that is maybe they got off your case, they stopped asking too many questions. But a second order consequence of that might mean that the new people that just joined along with that person ask fewer questions and your group becomes more productive overall. A third order consequence of that, something deeper, somebody might feel that connection with you. Somebody might become your mentee. Somebody might stay in your team for twice as long because you gave them the time and the attention. And so what feels more urgent between our email and mentoring somebody new? Email obviously feels more urgent, but when you look at the deeper consequences of doing each of those things, mentoring a new employee, for every minute we spend mentoring a new employee, that minute is worth 10 minutes of answering our email because there are those deeper consequences and because the connections run deeper than just what's immediately the result of something that we do.
Right. And I think that's, Stephen Covey came out with his four quadrants and the idea mm-hmm. of, important versus urgent is often if we take a moment and think about it, we would probably most of us come to this conclusion, mm-hmm. but not in the moment, right? In the moment we make decisions in the same way that we plan our diet and we have all these good intentions or we're going to go running. And then when it comes to that moment, It's not even like when I am supremely unproductive for a day or a week or a month, it just feels like I just get slotted into a groove and I'm just on a track and I'm not even making decisions. And it feels like there's no time or space to make decisions. And I loved your graphics, that there's this basic graphic showing a circle with a dotted, defined by a dotted line that you call attentional space. And that explained a ton to me about me. So can you kind of go over what that is and what it means?
Yeah, for sure. That moment by moment idea, it's so difficult. And I think it's kind of the missing link because anytime we step back from our work, we can see what's important, but it's in the moment that we actually act upon our goals. We act towards saying no to a funnel cake and working a bit harder as opposed to playing hooky with our partner, whatever it might be. It's that moment by moment basis that's the most important part of our productivity. But yet our devices give us these notifications that because when they arrive in our environment, they're the most salient object of attention at which we could direct our focus. They feel more important than they actually are.
So they're the rustle in the grass on
exactly,
the savanna.
Exactly, yeah. Where our attention is naturally drawn to them, but it's simply because of this wiring. Usually the fact that something is urgent means it's less important than what we truly ought to be doing. And I think the reason why this is so powerful is there are only so many things that we can pay attention to in the moment. Our attentional capacity, which is defined by our working memory capacity, which is how many things we can keep in our mind at one moment, is very, very limited. It's very constrained. It's usually constrained to about two, three, four things, depending on how distracted we are. We used to think the number was seven or eight things in any moment, but now we're realizing that it's much, much lower than that for most people. And because of this, we need to become deliberate about what we focus on because we only have so much attention to process things in the moment. And the way that I visualize this, this is actually one of the things that I'm most proud of in the book. If you have the physical book in front of you and you flip open to that that like publisher information page, you'll see that I get the illustration credit for the book. It says illustrations by Chris Bailey and Suniza Sumina, because I designed all the ones in the book myself on a napkin, and somebody took them and they made them suitable for a mass market trade book. But this is one of the things I'm most proud of is, you know, we can visualize what's on our mind by just the simple example. It's like a circle with a dotted line around it. And anything that we pay attention to in the moment passes through this attentional space. And by managing our attentional space better, which is anything that we're paying attention to in the moment, we manage our attention better, and then we get control over our attention. And then by doing this, the more control we have over our attention, the more we have control over our life, because a moment of attention never exists in isolation. And so because of this, if we're distracted in each moment, these moments build up, they accumulate day by day, week by week, month by month, year by year, to create a life that feels like we don't have a direction, like we're distracted, like things are overwhelming. And the converse is true. If we make an active effort to pay attention to what's meaningful in the moment, what's more consequential in the moment, beyond just the immediate moment, what actually creates a lasting change, a lasting impact in our life and the lives of other people, then our life feels more impactful and productive and creative and meaningful as a result. You know, when we pay attention to conversations, when we pay attention to projects, whatever we're paying attention to, that becomes our reality. And so I think this is why deliberately paying attention to things is the superpower of the 21st century. Because in any one moment of the day, either we have control and are driving what we focus on, or the environments around us have control over our attention. And I think the quality of our attention could be attributed to how much of our time we spend with purpose and deliberateness behind what we're doing.
Yeah. And one of the bits of science you brought in that I loved was this idea that different parts of our brain are actually engaged when we're doing sort of the short-term, the multitasking. That's the basal ganglia, which is just doing short-term stuff. So naturally, in a year or a month or a decade or at the end of our lives, when we're, we have like our experiencing self and our remembering self, and our remembering self doesn't remember because we did it all with our basal ganglia, as opposed to when we're focusing, we're using more of our hippocampus, which is creating long-term memories. That was like really eye-opening for me.
Yeah. We funnel experiences through a different part of our brain when we're multitasking, when we're trying to do too much in the moment versus when we're focused on one thing. So, we're each focused on this conversation right now, and because of that, you've got the turkey going, but I think you're mostly focused. I'm just kidding. We're both mostly focused on this conversation. Because of that, we process this conversation through our hippocampus, which is the memory centers of our mind. But our basal ganglia, which are responsible for rote habits, this is where habits are stored in our mind. We process what we're experiencing through our basal ganglia when we're multitasking, when we're doing too many things in the moment, or even more than one thing in the moment, because we can't actively focus on more than one thing. So we just rapidly switch between them, and then kind of like a movie where it's a bunch of frames stacked upon one another, which creates the illusion of movement. That's all multitasking is we switch rapidly back and forth so often that we feel like we're doing two things at the same time, when really we're compromising our performance of both. But by the way, though, if you're multitasking with something that is a habit, that doesn't require much thought, that doesn't, like, you don't really care to remember, I'm under the category of people who will say that that's okay to multitask with. I know everybody doesn't agree, but I think when you start with the science and work backwards to how you should do things, the science does agree with this. So say, for example, if you're listening to this podcast and you're doing some chores or you're folding laundry, because one is physical and one is oral, A-U-R-A-L. What that means is that you process the two experiences with a different part of your brain. You can do the laundry folding largely on autopilot mode. You don't really need to devote much conscious attention to it, because once you initiate any habit consciously, your brain runs through the rest of the experience largely on autopilot mode. You don't need to think about it. And because of that, you can be listening to the podcast right now. And I think this is something that we need to take to heart, is some things we don't really care about. Some things aren't meaningful. Doing chores, doing the laundry, doing the dishes. I don't really care to remember these things. I think they can be meaningful experiences when you do them mindfully. But if you'd rather be paying attention to a podcast, then that's fine, I think. But make sure that you don't try to do more than one meaningful thing in the moment, or more than one thing that requires you to focus on it to do it well, because your performance will most definitely suffer in those cases.
Right. And it's funny, because when I was reading about that, one of the examples you gave of a sort of a mindless task that you can do other things while, like, listen to a podcast was shopping. And I was thinking, oh no, I could never... Like, I'm always, like, looking at, you know, which stalk of broccoli and label reading. Like I would just when I try to go shopping and I'm on a phone call, I just sort of wander. I try to find the aisles where nobody else is, because I know I can't get out of there. Man.
I think that's that shows more about the quality of our diets than anything. I feel I've been harsh on my diet. I eat pretty well. I eat pretty cleanly, but. You know, to me, broccoli is broccoli. I think I'm missing out on something there.
Yeah, well, when it's brown and slimy, it's probably, time to leave that one and get a different stock.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Well, you guys have the most amazing greenhouses up there, right? You probably get fresh stuff all year round with your
technology. Well, they're all... Yeah, with our newfangled Canadian technology, they're all growing cannabis now that it's legal. No, I'm just kidding. the produce is always really good here. It's the most, you know, I think gratitude, this is like not related to anything that's related to this conversation, but I think gratitude is one of the most beautiful things in the world. Like, it's kind of a gateway to happiness. Wait, I'll make the connection. Happier people, research shows, are 31% more focused and productive than other people, because happiness actually increases the size of our attentional space, which allows us to process more in the moment.
Finally, we have justification for being happy.
Ooh, thank God, because I thought it was all for nothing, man. But, you know, gratitude is one of the most beautiful practices that you can think of. And the reason this comes to mind is when Arden and I, every night, we recall a few things that we're grateful for, whether from that day or in each other and the world around us. And yesterday we were talking about, you know, being able, it's snowing right now outside my window, and being able to go to the store and get a pomegranate, which doesn't grow anywhere near Canada, as far as I'm aware, pretty bad at geography, but you can get all these things that aren't even from Canada across the street, and you can eat whatever whatever healthy foods you want pretty much any time of the year. Like, what a beautiful world that we live in. We have so much to be grateful for around us, but that's not related to anything. Actually, it is.
Yeah, it totally is. I mean, so gratitude might be, you know, the ultimate use of our attention, you know, and you talk about, like, intention is the bouncer for attention.
Yeah.
Right. So if we're just on, you know, Instagram scrolling mindlessly, watching cheesecakes appear on Tasty versus, you know, cause I let me just take a moment and look around my office with the word gratitude in my ear, and I see it totally differently. I mean, I can look and see, like, there's, you know, behind me is a bookshelf of many of the books are by people that I've had the privilege to interview. And I'm like, oh my God, how lucky am I to have these connections, or looking at the camera that I can afford that allows me to do this stuff. Like, all this stuff. Like, I came into my office thinking, I'm going to do this podcast with Chris Bailey, and my office is a shithole. like, oh man, I feel like such a fraud. And now I'm looking at it and I'm seeing my Martin guitar.
Yeah.
I'm seeing a really nice running headlamp. Like this is like just gratitude has transformed. It's like a the best Instagram filter ever for the photograph of my office.
Yeah, and maybe this is the problem. But when you're on Instagram, you see everything through the lens of not having what everybody else has. But when you look around you, those are things you have already. Those are things that are already in your life. You know, I have this, you know, my turtle Edwards in the office here. I've got speakers, a soundproofed office, beautiful plants, a piano, kettlebells up in here. And we have so much to be grateful for. We just need to notice it in the first place. And, you know, I talk about happiness actually quite a bit in the book because it's so vital to invest in it as we invest in our productivity. Well, one simple way to kind of pat yourself on the back, one of my favorite ways is keeping an accomplishments list. And so throughout the week, maybe at the end of each day, you write down one or two things what you accomplished that day. And they don't have to be massive. They don't have to be, oh, I wrote 10,000 words and I did a great interview with somebody. They could be as simple as I opened the door for that person. That that made them feel happy because, you know, it's about somebody else then too. And you know, just this simple list, it reminds us to pat ourselves on the back. It was funny, one study that I encountered in writing the book that found that at any moment of the day, our mind is wandering away from what we truly want to be doing about 47% of the day, of the time. They looked at the activities that have been shown to make us the happiest. And so this study, it was a happiness study that surveyed about 250,000 people, or 250,000 responses from thousands of people. And what they did is they pinged them on their phone at random times, and they asked, in this moment, what are you doing? Are you focusing on it? And how happy are you? And they found the five activities that make us the happiest. Number five was listening to music. Number four was playing. Number three was talking and investing in our relationships. Number two is exercise. And number one, I don't know why people were responding on their phone when they were doing this, but number one was making love and maybe while listening to music and investing in their relationships. And it's exercise too. So I guess you kind of, and it's play. So I guess you tick every box at once. Maybe that's why. Why it's such a nice, right. All of these things kind of build up to that crescendo there.
Right. And if you and if it includes like, cocoa powder, cocaine.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, eating sushi off of someone's belly button. Like you can get the food in there too.
Yeah. You can get the food aspect.
Yeah.
You can eat a funnel cake off of somebody's.
Who answers their phone at that moment?
I don't know.
Maybe they waited a few minutes.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe they waited, 30 seconds in my case. No, I'm just kidding. But the idea is that, whatever we're doing, any one of these things, we're focused on what we're doing. It's focusing on things that make us the happiest. But more than that, doing anything deliberately that makes us the happiest. And a part of that is just noticing the things that we have to be grateful for, I think.
Yeah. So one thing that I was taken by is you talk about you have this the book is called Hyperfocus. We actually haven't mentioned the name of the book yet,
but I guess we have. I'm terrible at plugging my stuff, so thank you for mentioning it.
Yeah, but that massage therapist though you
yeah we've doubled her business overnight. Yeah.
But you say that hyperfocus, which is this intentional focus on. And I love, to go nesting layers here, your definition of productivity is doing what we intend to do. This is when we're in that hyper-focus mode, we are relaxed, happy, super productive. Whereas I realized I kind of had this image of myself as like being really productive, like kind of this, hamster on a wheel or bunny rabbit or like I'm da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, like I just wanted Space Invaders. When in fact, you're absolutely right that my most productive times have felt delicious and expansive.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think a lot of us need a book to tell us this. If you think back, we all have enough data at our disposal. When you think back to when you accomplished a crazy amount in one day, you probably weren't tending to a lot of distractions. You were probably working on one thing and chugging away at it with a deliberate level of attention. It doesn't, and this is something that I think we miss out on, is it doesn't matter how intense our attention is, as long as it is directed constantly at one thing. And we can work in slow motion, but as long as we're working on something that's actually important, we're going to accomplish more, and especially more of what we intend to do, and we're going to become more productive as a result of that. And hyperfocus is honestly the best name that I could come up with for this topic. But it has that consequence of making the mode seem more intense than it has to be. And honestly, the red cover of the book doesn't help that much, but don't tell my publisher I said that. But it's really just about this mindfulness, this deliberate attention that we have to bring to whatever we happen to be doing in the moment. I'm a big fan of writing slowly. I write more words when I write slowly as when I really, really try to hunker down and focus on one thing and set a timer for 30 minutes. I find instead if I'm writing for 60 minutes, I actually do write more than twice the amount of words, given it's double the amount of time, because what we lose in speed, we make up for in how much more deliberately we manage our attention, and that's everything right now, especially when we have all these distractions coming in. If we can work in a slower way, but maintain our focus and our drive toward doing one thing, it doesn't matter that we work a bit more slowly, because we're also able to work with greater intention.
Right. Well, I think, I do a lot of gardening in nice weather, and that involves like pointing water sources at ground. And there's a big difference if I have, if I'm just watering one bed, one part of the bed with a hose, like the water doesn't have to come out very fast to soak it. Whereas if it's the sprinkler that's just going back and forth, it could take hours.
Mm-hmm. There are people that see gardening as a chore too, but, any meaning, any experience, and I think this is true with our attention. Love, for example, in my eyes, is no different than sharing quality attention with somebody. In addition to quality time, we often share time with one another without sharing attention. And when we share that attention with experiences like gardening, people see gardening a lot of different ways. There are some people who see it as a chore they have to do after a busy day at the office. Then there are some people who get home from the office, and gardening is the most relaxing part of their day. They get to bring something to life by showering it with water and by pruning the branches. And it's the same experience, but we just relate to it very, very differently. And I think, we so often rush through experiences to get to something on the other side, and then we end up rushing through that. We rush through work to get to go home and do the chores, and we rush through those instead of savoring the work that we do, instead of savoring the chores that we have to do, and feeling grateful for the fact that we're doing them, for the fact that we have, a nice camera in the office, that we have a garden to tend to in the first place.
Right. And to me, the starting point of gratitude, which is a feeling of like enoughness or abundance, it has to start with attention. Like, there are days where I'm surrounded by nice stuff, and I feel like my attentional space is overflowing with too many things to do. Like that to me is like ground zero of ungratitude.
You can't you can't be grateful for what you don't notice, and you can't notice something without paying attention to it.
Yeah, and the feeling of overwhelm, of constant distraction, is itself. It just feels like there's a the song going on in my head is basically, you're not enough, you're not enough, you're not enough. If you were enough, you could handle all this.
Yeah. You need to listen to Vienna by Billy Joel. You need to get that song in your head.
Oh, Vienna
Slow
waits
down,
for you.
Crazy child. Yeah. Vienna always waits. Vienna's right now. Whatever we're doing, we just need to see it.
Hmm. My wife had a dachshund named Vienna when she was a kid.
Oh, man. I think if there's any one song that has to do with productivity, it's Vienna by Billy Joel.
Or you Can't Hurry Love.
Who's that by? Is that Billy Joel?
No, isn't that is it Diana Ross and the Supremes? Someone's going to write in if I'm wrong.
Yeah,
you
don't
can't
be wrong
hurry
about
love.
Bill Collins, man. It's Phil Collins, Diana Ross. Or the Supremes? Maybe you're thinking of the Supremes? I see here. I play you a bar, but then this will get flagged for copyright violation.
Yeah, if I sing it, no one will have that problem.
Nobody would also recognize the song either, so they have that problem.
Anyway, so here's what I was thinking we could do. And I don't want to say, like, I'm looking through all the notes I took on the book. And so for people who are listening to this thinking, I got it, believe me, you don't got it. Like, there are so many beautiful little exercises and suggestions and tips and tricks. Like, this is a really, really rich dive. So anyone
what percent of the book would you say we got to in the notes? Just out of curiosity.
7.
Oh, okay.
I think we covered some top line stuff, but we haven't really got. But what I'd love to do is I'm looking at my window at a new office shed being built, and basically I had this built for a couple of reasons. One is I have adult children who are sort of semi living at home a lot of the time, and like this because this is a bedroom. Like, there's a lot of ill feeling that one of my children's basically living in a closet.
Yeah.
Another is I do a lot of podcasting.
Like Harry Potter.
Yeah, but
yeah,
there's.
But not.
It's a ranch house. There's not even stairs. but yeah, it's not. Yeah, it turns out that actually living in a closet is not as much fun as being Harry Potter.
No, well, I don't think Harry Potter enjoyed his time under the under the stairs. But yeah,
no, but it made him who he was.
It did. Yeah, and you have to be grateful for your experiences that are transformative, don't you?
The other problem is it's right next to the bathroom. People, like, you know, vacuum, and whenever I'm podcasting, I'm like shh, 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 shh. And also, like, really the thing is, like, this is where my attention goes to die when I'm like, I'm not working. It's like 7 o'clock at night. I'll still find myself in here checking email, going on Slack, doing little things. And so I thought, get it out of the house. And then I thought, okay, 12 by 12, like slightly bigger than this room, and I'm going to have all my stuff. And then I read your book, and I'm like, I don't want to do that. I kind of wish it was half the size. Like, I kind of wish it was a place where I could create a temple to hyperfocus. And I'm wondering if you can help me think that through.
Yeah, I really like that. I think the key in the environment around you is to have nothing that would consume your full attention if you focus on it. And more than that, nothing that calls out for your attention should you focus on it. So in my office here, my phone isn't here. My tablet isn't here. My tablet I use as a distractions device. And so I do all my email on that, unless I have to send some attachments, which is difficult to do on the iPad, but I'm getting better at it. And so I would say that would be the one thing, is be very, very thoughtful about the devices you have in there. But besides that, get some good speakers in there, I would say, in case you want to listen to some classical music, you know, some beautiful classical music. Everybody finds music impacts their productivity and their focus differently. It depends on how familiar the music sounds to you, and how simple it is. So music that's simple and familiar, I listen to classical music or you know, depressing Ed Sheeran songs on repeat one for most of the day. But that can help. Having a convertible desk will help to kind of get you moving a little bit. Having a meditation cushion, it's one of my favorite things. If I need a break throughout the day, my meditation cushion, I'm touching it with my foot right now. Have some plants, some noise-canceling headphones in case there's too much noise around you. And be very, very thoughtful about the environment that you're in, because it matters so, so much. Okay. What have you decided to do differently because of the book?
Well, so one thing is I have a book problem, right? So as a podcaster, I get either buy or get 5 to 10 books a month, and I mm-hmm. love them all. And and this is I'm not the Library of Congress. I've bought additional bookshelves so that they're like metastasizing around my walls.
Yeah.
And so that's one thing that I'm concerned about, is that, I've got books here that I will probably never crack open again. And it's just like a lot of visual stimulus. Another thing that I'm worried about is my phone. So I need to talk to people sometimes. So do I do that solely by Skype? One of the things I like about the phone is I get to walk around. So I'm not tethered to the little headphone on my computer.
Yeah.
I saw before we cut off the video, you have looks like ear pods, so you can you're not tied wired to your computer.
Yeah, I've got some AirPods going on here. But what helps with the phone, I think, get the phone out of there, because it's a personalized world of distraction, and Skype isn't that distracting. It's kind of singular in its purpose. For dealing with the phone throughout the day, K-Safe, I don't know if you've heard of this. It's a time locking container, and it's designed for food. And so if you're really resisting a chocolate bar or something, or you want to put the TV remote away or a video game controller away for a little bit, you can lock it in the safe, and in the safe you put the time that you want it to unlock at, and so you can lock something away for 6 hours, whether it's a device or something like that.
I feel I would turn into one of the monkeys at the beginning of 2001 if I had a device in that safe. I would just be bouncing all over it, trying to figure out how to. I'd be poking it with safety pins and.
Oh man, yeah, it's like a new age marshmallow test. this is something that would be helpful if you find that you want to have the phone nearby, but you don't want a personalized world. But I would recommend doing Skype. That's how I do all my phone calls, because our phone. It presents us with cues. It's not the problem, that we go into an app for 2 minutes and, we feel, I want to check Instagram for a little bit. And if we had that intention, we check Instagram for a bit, then we were able to go back really, really quickly to what we were doing before. Frankly, it wouldn't be that big of a problem. The problem is that we go to Instagram for a few minutes, but then we go for a few minutes more. And then we go to this loop of apps, that often the one that we visit first thing in the morning, that is this personalized world of distraction. And the best solution is to not encounter that situation in the first place. Set up some screen time features on your phone. Here's a nice compromise. Most phones have a grayscale mode, grayscale. What this does, it's the most least known feature of most phones, but yet I find that this feature cuts the amount of time I spend on my phone in half while not changing any of the functionality. And it's usually a setting that's buried in the accessibility panel of your phone.
Yeah, but I wish they could do that with M&Ms. People would find it much easier.
That would be amazing. Yeah, the M&Ms would be so boring. But the feature turns your phone screen black and white. And so there's no color. And so there isn't that color psychology, which is hooking your attention. And Instagram and other apps become far less stimulating when they're in black and white. And so maybe that's a good middle ground
great. So the phone, I think we can handle. The other thing, you have an exercise that you ask us to do at the beginning with your four quadrants about productive and unproductive on the left, and unattractive and attractive over the top. And the thing that I got most confused about was email. And you're right that we don't spend a lot of time doing email, but we spend a lot of time sort of in email. Like I was thinking, maybe I don't even want internet in my office. Maybe I just want a writer's cave. But then I'm like, oh, wait, I podcast. Like the whole point, one of the whole points was to get me out of the house so people don't have to walk on eggshells when I'm podcasting. So I want an internet connection, but I don't want my internet connection. Like I do all my best work at coffee shops and trains and airplanes and and power outages.
So something that I do with food here, because I have a very difficult time resisting food, especially chips. If there's a bag of chips in the house, I can't stop thinking about it until the bag is gone. And so what I do is I give the bag to Arden, and whenever I want a little bit, I'll ask Arden, can I have a bowl of chips? And she'll run downstairs wherever she hides the bags of chips, and she'll get me a bowl. And so if I want another bowl of chips, she'll say, no, you've already had a bowl, or I have to like come crawling back to her, and I feel all self-conscious and everything. And maybe a similar thing would be possible with the internet, where there's some parental control feature of a router where you ask, you know, honey, can I, you know, I need to do a podcast. You mind, where you have to come crawling back to her each time. Maybe that's a way to get some limits, but also some accountability with that.
I mean, I was looking at some of the apps you recommend. I guess the first one was like freedom.io.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out how to use that. Part of me, you know, understands how weak my will is compared to all the distractions. And part of me is insulted that I would need a K-Safe or a Grayscale or an app that turns off the apps and websites. Like, am I fooling myself?
I think you need to enable the app. This is something that I've realized myself, is that we like to think that we're stronger than we are, but in the moment, we're not as strong as we believe ourselves to be previously. And so in the moment, you know, deciding between, you know, trying to get a six-pack by the summertime and get a job promotion too, in the moment, we want nothing more than to order takeout and play hooky. And so there's this mismatch between what's good for us in the short term or what we want in the immediate term and what's actually good for us in the medium to long term. And so I think we need to make things easy on ourselves wherever possible. There's a point in writing the book, and I write about this, in the book where I need to enable a distractions blocker whenever I write. I enable an app, either Freedom or Self-Control, where you have to actually restart your computer if you want access to the websites that are your problem points. Like if you want to access the news, you have to physically restart your computer if you want to access it. And what this does, over the course of one writing session, I just thought, okay, today as an experiment, I'm not going to limit the distractions that I face. And I found myself going to the same old, well, I'll just check the news for a little bit. I'll just check email just once and then go back. But the cost of doing so in the moment, when we not giving ourselves the option to do that, is usually the best course of action. Because you know, we all fall into these same pitfalls because we're wired to crave different things that are good for us in the moment.
Right. I guess one of the things that I'm realizing as we're talking is, like, I have done zero kind of deep work in the past couple of weeks in terms of, like, not having any distractions. If I do, like, 90 minutes a day, which doesn't feel like it's a huge change in my whole life, if I just, like, set up these, anti-distraction technologies for 90 minutes a day— that's, you know, there's probably a huge 80-20 win.
Oh, yeah. And you know, when you do that, because if you don't want to feel trapped, this is a tactic that works well for me, is to give yourself a choice, either write or do nothing. So you can choose to do nothing. but it's a choice, and you don't have to write. You can do nothing instead, but you must sit there. You must be in that cave with the internet access shut off, and in that situation, you usually find because the resistance we have to doing certain tasks is usually stacked towards the beginning of that task, and so it takes us, you know, it takes us a month to build up the courage to clean out the basement closet. But once we do it for just 2 minutes, we can keep going for another month, cleaning that thing out. It's always stacked towards the beginning.
That was the most helpful image in the book for me, was the sort of the noise graph of resistance and how after about 40 seconds or 2 minutes, it's gone.
Yeah. And this is, I don't have research to back this up. But when you overlay, this is my prognostication, that when you overlay these two ideas, first of all, that we're distracted every 40 seconds, and second of all, that the resistance we have to doing something is stacked towards the beginning, you stack these things on top of one another, and perhaps this is that problem in action, where we feel resistance to doing something. So this is why we distract ourselves every 40 seconds. Then maybe the guilt sets in, or the opposite effect sets in, where we feel bad about not doing something else. So we get another hit of dopamine. We cave into the novelty bias, and then we do something else that isn't work. But it's I find it a really helpful idea to think about that resistance.
But I love the idea of doing nothing as the alternative. So now the writing becomes the novelty.
Yeah, exactly. It's the most novel thing at which you can direct your attention in the moment.
Right, because you have this wonderful study about, I guess, 71% of men would prefer to self-administer a painful shock than sit with their own thoughts.
Exactly, yeah. And this isn't to say that mind wandering is a bad thing, because this is often when our best ideas come to us, but it's so critical to realize that we can use the repellent effect of that for something productive too.
Right. And well, and half of the book is about what you call scatter focus, which is about creativity as opposed to productivity.
I just have to interrupt you, because I have a heart out a few minutes ago.
Oh, okay.
Well, sorry about that.
That's all right. There you are modeling what you preach about attention and intention.
So sorry about that. We would have scheduled longer time, but I have another call like right now.
Okay, well, let's...
Sorry about that.
The book is hyper-focused. Where can people find you? Quickly.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm sorry. I always feel rude cutting stuff, but anyway. The book is called Hyper-Focus: How to Be More Productive in a World of Distraction. And it's also an audiobook. If you like the sound of my voice, it's as an audiobook. If you don't like the sound of my voice, there's the physical book with all the beautiful illustrations. And my website is called alifeofproductivity.com, where I write a semi-weekly column.
Awesome. Well, you and I hope we'll continue our conversations. Punctual right now. And Chris Bailey, thank you so much for this wonderful chat and for all the work you do.
Thank you so much for having me, man. Let me know when you get the new, I'm going to call it your man cave, but when you get the new man cave hooked up and ready to go, if you do decide to record podcasts out of it, we'll have to chat again.
Will do. Look forward to it.
Awesome, man. Have fun.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
See you, man.
All right. I hope you found that conversation with Chris Bailey as fun and interesting and useful, above all, useful, as I did. Hopefully, you'll take away some gems from this conversation that you can use right away. Maybe jot down a couple of things that you plan to start implementing. But definitely get the book. There's so much in there that we didn't cover, the nitty-gritty details of how to live a purposeful and focused and productive life. Highly, highly recommend it. So to watch the YouTube video, or to get links to Chris's books or his appearances on the Bregman Leadership Podcast, you can head over to the show notes at plantyourself.com/301. If you're new to the show, you can catch up on 300 archived episodes over at plantyourself.com. If you would like to help the show, one way to do it is to leave a review
on Apple Podcasts or iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify or Pandora or wherever you get your podcasts. A review is the easiest and most powerful way to let other people know about the show so that we can continue to grow our audience and continue to spread this message. If you'd like to throw some cash our way to help support the mission of this show, you might be noticing that this is a different microphone. So this was a big expenditure this week. It's in preparation partly for Josh coming up and us recording the audiobook, but also I got a better boom arm so the thing isn't just swinging into my face all the time, and a better microphone now that I'm going to be moving into a dedicated office space. I have more control over ambient sound, so decided to upgrade. And all that costs money, as does the time it takes me every week to find guests, prepare, read their books, interview them, create the show notes, promote, do all the stuff that gets done to make a podcast successful. And if you would like to be my partner in that and helping that go out to the world, I would really appreciate it. You can go over to plantyourself.com and look on the right sidebar, click the Patreon link, and then you can become a patron of the show with an ongoing monthly contribution. All right, so in running news, did a pretty good 6 miles this morning. It was really cold when I started, but by the end, I had to remove the heavy winter gloves and wish I was wearing one fewer layer on top, so it feels good. As I said, Josh is coming tomorrow, so I'm sure he's going to put me through my paces for the next 3 mornings. In garden news, all we've been doing is going out during the day and uncovering the kale and mustard greens and collards, and then at night, in preparation for the frost, covering them up again. So probably more calories going into keeping the beds alive than in the calories we're getting from them, but still can't beat greens for nutrients. We're getting our garden greens are making our smoothies these days. And now time for thanks. Thanks, of course, to Will Ridenour for his beautiful song, Sabali Dawn, The Dance of Peace, as this show's theme music. Check out willridenour.com for more of his beautiful Kora music. And thanks to the people who are already supporting this show. Your names always bring a smile to my face, and here we go. Kim Harrison, Lynn McClellan, Anthony Disson, Brittany Porter, Dominic Mara, Barbara Whitney, Tammy Black, Amy Good, Amanda Havily, Mary Jane Wheeler, Ellen Kennelly, Melissa Cobb, Rachel Burns, Christine Nielsen, Tina Sharp, Tina Ahern, Jen Volkanovsky, David Vizek, Mysterious Michelle X, Elizabeth Felton, Victoria Dolomanova, Leia Stoller, Alan Christensen, Colleen Peck, Michelle Andrew, Josina, Julianne Roland, Sue Dolnick, Sarah Durkis, Ron the Circus, Kelly Cameron, Wayne Pedersen, Leanne Peterson, Janet Selby, Claire Adams, Tom Franzek, Jeanette Benham, Gila, Sarah, David Donahue, Blair, Cyber, Dorona, Vizov, Jew, and Carolina, Chintati, Jody Friesen, Ruth Ann Vanderbrook, Misha Rose, Michael Warbeck, Ethan Lee, Steer, Stacey Z. Alicia Lemus, Rebecca Hughes, Val Linneman, Rhymes with Cinnamon, Nick Harper, Stephanie Holmes, Martha Bergner, Nicole Ramsey, Susan Amon, Molly Levine, The Inscrutable Harry R., Susan Laverty, The Panda Vegan, Craig Kovic, Adam Sharp, Karen Burley, Heather Morgan, Ashley Corcoran, Kelly Machia, Deanne Norton, Bonnie Lynch, of Plant Happy Oregon, Sabina Kurtzels, Nigel Davies, Marion Blum, Teresa Copel, Shell Rudler, Julia Rockins, Reed O'Connell, Brian Sheridan, Chan, Hirschman, Kate Yorles, and Dayat, Julie Langholm, Hedegaard, Isa Tuzinwa, Connie Hainline, Aaron Greer, Alicia Davis, Adita Lael, Heather O'Connor, Carolyn Jensen, Cheryl Lakoski, Plant Power Powerhouse, Garrett Smith, Scott Mirani, Karen Joe Crabby, Tanya Lewis, Kirby Burton, Teresa Carell. Kevin McCauley, Elizabeth Rothschild, Kelly Baker Miracle, Ann Jesse, Cheryl Dwyer, Jenny Hazelton, Valerie Peltier, Peter W. Evans, Colleen Harrison, Justine Divitt, Josh Oshler, Summer Meyer, Dennis Burr, Darby Kelly, Laurie Fanny, Linnea Lundquist, Valerie Hummel, Deb Cassia, Emily Iconelli, Levy Wallach, Rosamund McAtee, Dan McCorney, Stephen Leland, Patty DiMartino, Mike and Donna Carth, Deanne Bishop, Bilberry Elf, Gunter Schmidt, Marjorie Lewis, Kelly Molden, Teresha Adams, and Ian Kramer for your generous support of the podcast. That's it for this week. As always, be well, my friends. All right, time for thanks. Thanks to Will Ridenour for allowing me to use his beautiful song, Sabali Dawn, The Dance of Peace. You can find more of Will's music at his website, willridenour.com. And of course, thanks to all of you Plant Yourself Podcast patrons. Kim Harrison, Lynn McClellan, Anthony Disson, Brittany Porter, Dominic Mara, Barbara Whitney, Tammy Black, Amy Good, Amanda Heatherly, Mary Jean Wheeler, Ellen Kennelly, Melissa Cobb, Rachel Behrens, Christine Nielsen, Tina Sharp, Tina Ahern, Jen Filikanovsky, David Vizek, The Mysterious Michelle X, Elizabeth Feldman, Leia Stoller, Alan Christensen, Colleen Peck, Michelle Andrew, Josina, Sarah Durkis, Rhymes with Circus, Kelly Cameron, Wayne Pedersen, Janet Selby, Care Adams, Tom Franzek, Jeanette Benham, Gila Sert, David Donahue, Blair Cyber, Torona Vizo, Gio, and Carol Argentati, Jody Friesner, with Ann Funderburk, Misha Rosen, Michael Warbeck. The equally mysterious Tracy Z, Aviva L, Alicia Lemus, Rebecca Hughes, Val Linneman, Rhymes with Cinnamon, Nick Harpers, and Martha Bergner, Susan Ahmad, Molly Levine, The Inscrutable Harry R, Susan Laverty, The Panda, Vegan Craig Kovic, Adam Scharf, Karen Burry, Heather Morgan, Kelly Machia, Deanne Norton, Bonnie Lynch, The Plant, Happy Oregon, Sabina Kurtzels, Nigel Davies, Marion Blum, Teresa Copel, Julian Watkins, Breed O'Connell, Shannon Hirsch, Shannon Hirschman, Linda Ayat, Colm Hedegaard, Issa Tuzuwa, Connie Hainline, Aaron Greer, Alicia Davis, Heather O'Connor, Carolyn Jensen, Sherry Orlikowski of Plant Powered for Health, Karen Smith, Scott Marani, Karen and Joe Crabtree, Tanya Lewis, Kirby Burton, Teresa Carell, Kevin McCauley, Elizabeth Rothschild, Ann Jesse, Cheryl Dwyer, Jenny Hazelton, Valerie Peltier, Peter W. Evans, Colleen Harrison, Justine Divitt, Joshua Sommermeyer, Dennis Bird, Darmy Kelly, Laurie Fanny, Linnea Lundquist, Valerie Hummel, Emily Iaconelli, Levy Wallach, Rosamund McAtee, Dan McCorney, Stephen Lehman, Patty DiMartino, Mike and Donna Carson, Deanne Bishop, Bill Brielf, Gunter Schmidt, Marjorie Lewis, Kelly Molden, Trisha Adams, Ian Kramer, Nancy Sheldon, Lindsay Bashford, Gunn-Marie Hagen, Tracy Gullish, Laura Heaton, Meg from Mama Says, Rochelle Kennedy, Diana Goldman, Stacey Stokes, Ben Savage, Michael Kay, Holly Butler, Diana, David Hughes, Connie Rogers, Claire England, Sally Robertson, Parham Ganchi, Amy Daly, Brian Tourville, Mark Jeffrey Johnson, Josie Dempsey, Karen Schmidt, Pamela Hayden, Emily Perryman, Olga Sidorowska, Allison Corbett, Richard Stone, Lauren Vaught, of Edible Musings, Aaron Hasty, Sean Owen, Sagar Nayak, Erica Piedra, and Danielle Roberts for your generous support of the podcast. That's it for today. As always, be well, my friends. Let's take this home with some gratitudes. First of all, thanks to Mama Earth. You have been so very, very good to me. Second, Will Ridenour donated the use of his beautiful song Sabali Dawn as the theme music for this show. You can find out more about Will's music at willridenour.com. Third, thanks to all the patrons of the Plant Yourself podcast for your financial support. You can read the names of all the patrons at any show notes at plantyourself.com. If you would like to become a patron to show your gratitude for the work I'm doing and help support it, you can do so at plantyourself.com/gift. That's G-I-F-T, all lowercase. And finally, I want to thank you, the listener, for making all of this possible, for giving me a reason to reach out to people, to have conversations, to edit, produce, publicize, all the stuff that I do is for you, so that we can continue to have conversations and continue to ripple out healing and transformation into the world.